This is an ABC podcast.
This is Pacific Beach on ABC Radio Australia. Today, Tonga is a nation in mourning as it remembers the Prime Minister Akalisi Pohiva, who has died. But the pro-democracy leaders being remembered much further afield too, right across the Pacific region, also in Australia. Among many people we've spoken to and who you'll hear from shortly is the current Australian High Commissioner to Tonga.
Him in formal settings in his office. I met him at sort of social and cultural and sporting events, and I had the honour of hosting him for lunch at my house in Nuku'alofa. I found him to be friendly and articulate. His political career, which, as you know, was long and distinguished, I think will form a significant part of Tonga's recent history.
And we'll also look at why the power of trade unions in the Pacific's been waning and what some are planning to do about that. We'll have that and more coming up here on Pacific Beach. Good morning, I'm Catherine Grau. Well, this morning, the Kingdom of Tonga is indeed a country in mourning. Right across the country, people are remembering the man who had been their Prime Minister. Akalisi Pohiva died yesterday in New Zealand after battling ill health for months. He was 78. He had been hailed the Nelson Mandela of the Pacific after he'd fought for decades to bring democracy to the kingdom and reduce the influence of Tonga's royal family in the country's political decision making. Now, he clashed regularly with the king for many years. He was even imprisoned for contempt of parliament and charged twice with sedition. But finally, in 2010, the country's constitution was amended, and that paved the way for the first democratic elections. And finally, in 2014, Akalisi Pohiva became prime minister. Here is some of what he told Pacific Beach after his historic election.
I think the people of Tonga have been waiting far too long for a leader with proven integrity. That's what the people have been waiting far too long for someone to come along, for a leader to come along and lead the country, what I call good governance. A leader, as I said, with proven integrity. A leader who can lead the people, who can have the trust and faith of the people.
It's the voice of the late Prime Minister of Tonga, Akalisi Pohiva, speaking with Pacific Beach back in 2014. Now, since news of his death came out yesterday, around this time, tributes have been pouring in from across the Pacific, from Australia's Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, who said that Mr. Pohiva was a passionate advocate for his people, to Papua New Guinea's Prime Minister, James Marape, who described Mr. Pohiva's death as a great loss for the people of Tonga. Meanwhile, Tonga's national rugby union team, the Ikale Itahi, have also extended their condolences too. We will hear more on the reaction from people in Tonga shortly, but also as well, the Tongan community here in Australia is in mourning. Here is Feke Kametoni, the chairman of the Tongan Victorian Association.
We've lost a hero of the democracy movement. Not only that, but also human rights. Since he started this movement in the 80s, and I think he'll be remembered as the pioneer of the movement, but also to be a prime minister as well, as one of the great leaders of Tonga.
On social media, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of posts too, but also calls for people to be putting their political differences aside at this time and pay their respects. That is a message that's been echoed by Sulieni Late from the Brisbane Tongan community.
I think this is a time, despite your political views, it's a time for the people as a whole to come together and unite in a time of mourning where everyone has their differences in terms of politics. And I know this has been a very divided season for different aspects. You'll probably be aware with the news that with Facebook and there's certain discussions of defamation and so forth been going on with different areas of the political arena in Tonga. This is a time that we put all our politics aside for a moment, come together, mourn the loss of the office of the Prime Minister, and look towards the future.
Well, that is there, Sulieni Late. And as he suggested, there have been critics of Mr. Pohiva who say that his own leadership was far from being democratic. Kalafit Mwala, who is now a publisher in Tonga, but he previously worked as Akalisi Pohiva's media advisor, albeit for a brief time when he was first elected as prime minister. He says that Mr. Pohiva was a much better opposition leader than PM.
He promised that there'd be going to be reform. He promised to be able to fight corruption. He promised that there would be good governance, that there would be transparency, there'd be a maintenance of a free press in Tonga. The complaint in Tonga is that very, very few, if any, of the promises he made came into being.
Well, despite the Prime Minister's ill health over the past year, news of his death has certainly still left many Tongans in shock. Of course, the death of a sitting Prime Minister is unprecedented. It is expected that people will begin several days of mourning now and people will be dressed in black right across the kingdom. Melione Urea used to work with Tonga's Ministry of Internal Affairs. I spoke with her earlier for her personal reflections.
As a Tongan growing up in Tonga, and you know, from ever since primary school, always knowing and recognizing and hearing and knowing of this significant person that has always been inside. So, and you're talking about years ago, and still now, as we're all adults and have worked in government and then worked outside of government, definitely, even though we had not worked with him, we do all recognize the role that he played in Tonga. And so this is very interesting for Tonga as a whole, because it's a big loss of a leader.
Indeed, he was obviously the strongest advocate pushing for democracy for Tonga.
And no doubt.
Would it be fair to say that Tonga would not be where it is today without Akalesi Pihiva existing?
I think so. You know, and that may be depending on how proceed, but definitely the drive that he had, he was, you know, it would be fair to say that he was the key driver of these changes.
And while the news of his death obviously is still the primary focus at the moment, so perhaps it is a little bit too early to really look at this in detail, but there had been criticism of the Prime Minister and the way that he governed, some saying that he had become essentially hypocritical and that the way that he had ruled was not necessarily so democratic. Do you think that perhaps the last few years of him being Prime Minister, obviously always difficult to be a country's leader, perhaps those sorts of criticisms might overshadow, though, what else is remembered of him as that pro-democracy advocate?
To be honest, I don't know, and probably, as you correctly said, maybe too early to say. I think there's a general feeling of just sadness of losing a leader, regardless of the differences it may eventuate. But I think the general feeling is that, yeah, people recognize him as a leader, and people do recognize he's also a father, grandfather, just like everyone else.
Melione Urea, who used to work with Tonga's Ministry of Internal Affairs, speaking to me earlier. Well, Akalesi Pihiva's last official overseas trip was to Tuvalu for this year's Pacific Islands Forum meeting there just a few weeks ago. Now, at the time, he made headlines right around the world when it was revealed that he'd been reduced to tears when climate change activists delivered a presentation to the leaders. Dame Meg Taylor, who is the head of the Pacific Islands Forum Secretariat, was there. She says that Mr. Pihiva's presence at this year's meeting was extremely important because he helped to steer the final outcomes reached on issues like West Papua and climate change. I spoke with her earlier. Dame Meg, you saw Mr. Pihiva just a few weeks ago in Tuvalu for this year's Pacific Islands Forum leaders meeting. You described his presence or his attendance at that event as a way that he was saying goodbye and making a final resounding stand on issues that were close to his heart. What are your final memories of the man who was Tonga's Prime Minister?
A man who was a great advocate for democracy and human rights in the region. One who had taken his country through change, was very adamant that people's rights were protected, was very vocal and around the issue of West Papua, a great advocate for the rights of people there, that their human rights should be protected. Had a very strong relationship with civil society as well. When I first met him, I know that he wasn't totally convinced about a woman being the Secretary General of the Forum, but he was always so supportive after that first meeting. and always very open in his discussions with me. And I think that he will be missed.
So did you find him perhaps somewhat traditional in some of his perspectives, but obviously very much, and you were among many who have described him also as a fighter as well. But was he a bit more traditional, as you say, in his perspective about a female Secretary General of the Pacific Islands Forum?
Well, I think he was cautious. I think he was cautious about it, but I think that he soon understood and learnt that, you know, we have a role to play in the development of our region as well as our brothers.
As we've just mentioned, his last official outing as Prime Minister was at the event in Tuvalu. Yeah. And he really made quite a lot of headlines by some of his actions and the things that he said. And you've noted, in fact, that some of the major outcomes that leaders were able to reach, he was largely behind them. Do you think that was kind of his intention, to have one last real significant influence?
Well, when I saw him, I thought he appeared to be in better health than I imagined, particularly on the second day when we had on the day of the plenary and the discussions the leaders had with civil society. He was extremely articulate and very forthright about the human rights issues for West Papua on the climate change as well, and particularly at a time when I think it was during the Tautalanga that we had, which was the discussions around climate that Tuvalu hosted, that when young women got up and spoke about what it would mean to lose their homeland, what it would mean if they lost their culture. And Pohiva was moved to tears, like many of us were, but very supportive of these young people and of the youth and the future generations. And I think that his time with us there was a way of saying that he may not be with us again, but he had made that journey, and it was a significant journey. But he was such a humble person in many, many ways and was making the peace with everyone.
Mm. In terms of where this leaves Tonga as well in the situation there, he, of course, was such an advocate and obviously helped bring Tonga to where it is today as a democracy. Do you think what he began will continue, or is there a risk? Do you think that perhaps with him now gone, things may not stay the same?
Well, I think he himself was such a great fighter and an advocate, but he also understood well that he lived in a country that had a whole system of governance. And what the future holds now is how other members of parliament will take on the challenge of holding together a democratic government.
Dame Meg, thank you so much for your time and your reflections of Tonga's Prime Minister, Akalisi Pohiva.
Thank you.
And Adrian Morrison is Australia's current High Commissioner to Tonga. I spoke with him just a short time ago for his reflections on Akalisi Pohiva. Adrian Morrison, you became Australia's High Commissioner to Tonga only at the start of this year. And of course, the Prime Minister had largely been unwell in that time and in hospital for much of that time. So do you have any personal memories of him?
Oh, thank you, Catherine, and good morning to you. You're quite correct. I the privilege of being Australia's High Commissioner in Tonga. I took up that position in mid-February. If I could just express my condolences and sympathy to his family, to his friends and to his colleagues, they're in our thoughts and in our prayers. His political career, which, as you know, was long and distinguished, I think will form a significant part of Tonga's recent history. But I would leave a detailed analysis of his contribution to historians and political analysts, particularly Tongan historians and political analysts. But in my role as High Commissioner, I've met him several times since arriving in Nuku'alofa in February. I met him in formal settings in his office. I met him at sort of social and cultural and sporting events. And I had the honour of hosting him for lunch at my house in Nuku'alofa. I found him to be friendly and articulate. I saw him last several weeks ago at a rugby match in Nuku'alofa between the Tongan national side and the Western Force rugby team. That Ikali Tahi won that day, and while I didn't speak to Prime Minister Pohiva after the match, I know he would have been very, very proud and very, very happy with that result.
Now, obviously the relationship between Australia and Tonga, as it is in other parts of the Pacific, is a long one. Australia, at the time of, in the aftermath of the pro-democracy riots in 2006, that obviously destroyed much of the capital, left 8 people dead, Australia, along with New Zealand, did send in some peacekeepers after that. Mr. Pohiva had criticised that as an intervention. Do you think that he softened his stance on Australia? Where do you summarise and say that relationships between the two countries have been left under his leadership?
I think that the relationship at the moment is in very good stead. As you said, our relationship with Tonga, like our relationships with other members of the Pacific, it's based on long and deep friendship, where we respect each other and we support our mutual stability, security and prosperity. And, of course, the Pacific step-up announced by Prime Minister Morrison last year will build on that very solid foundation to create an even deeper relationship.
Obviously, plans are underway for things like a funeral for Mr. Bahiva. Obviously, it's unprecedented to have a sitting Prime Minister die.
Yes.
Cabinet, I understand, has been meeting in the last 24 hours to make many of those decisions, but also to work out who will be the new Prime Minister. The Deputy Prime Minister is automatically the acting PM in this sort of situation. I know it's still obviously very early, but how do you expect things to play out with the future relations with Tonga and a new Prime Minister?
In terms of the relationship with Australia, I think it will continue to be strong and friendly and respectful. As you say, there are processes in place. I think I'm not in Nuku'alofa at the moment. I'm in Australia, but I understand that Parliament was sitting but has risen. There are processes under which the Parliament will convene and then elect a new Prime Minister. I'm not sure when that will happen, but I imagine it will happen in the next few weeks.
High Commissioner, thank you so much for your time. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
You're very welcome, Catherine. Thank you.
You're listening to Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia.
Turning to other stories now, and Vanuatu is at risk of experiencing a diabetes epidemic, and now its own health ministry is recommending that the government set up specialised medical hubs so it can deal with what is a looming crisis, doing that instead of taking up treatments offered by foreign companies as it has been. Now, this proposal from the health ministry comes just days after a senior ministry official raised his concerns over an agreement that exists, that is the one between a controversial US-based medical cannabis company and the Vanuatu government. With more, here is Priyanka Srinivasan.
Vanuatu's Ministry of Health has endorsed a new project to create two specialised medical centres to treat non-communicable diseases, or NCDs, including diabetes, obesity and hypertension. Under the proposal, the hubs would be staffed by physiotherapists, dietitians, and makers of prosthetic limbs to provide high-quality care to patients. Russell Tomata, Director of Curative and Hospital Services from the Ministry of Health, has called the hubs a one-stop shop, tailored to address the country's health crisis.
It's about time that we have to treat this separately and take this very seriously.
Diabetes in Vanuatu is on the rise. In 1996, the World Health Organization estimated 10% of the population were affected. Today, the figure sits at more than 15%. Julie Shug from Vanuatu's Amputee Association says that on average, four limbs are cut off at Port Vila's Central Hospital each week as a result of diabetes.
Predominantly type 2 diabetes, diet-related and nearly always preventable.
Mr. Tomata says the urgency of the situation has forced the ministry to propose these primary care centres.
Initially, we invest more on the preventative side, but when this epidemic now becomes an endemic in our country, then, you have to address both of the situations at the same time.
But he says the idea for the NCD hub has been ignored in favour of the controversial US-based medicinal marijuana company, Phoenix Life Sciences International, that has developed a diabetes medication it wants to trial in Vanuatu.
Phoenix Life Sciences came in last year. No one was picking up on this NCD hub, and everybody, even our partners, knew about this NCD hub.
Julie Shug, however, says the government should consider investing in cannabis as a natural alternative way to treat disease.
The medicinal marijuana would be amazing here, and it could grow here really well, which would provide income.
She's also sceptical that the Ministry of Health's project can get off the ground.
I think it's a big dream. The Ministry of Health maybe are not really understanding how expensive, how costly it's going to be to have these qualified people and various islands around the country. It would be amazing if it happened. I just don't know how they can do it financially.
But Ms. Shug agrees that Vanuatu needs new solutions to better tackle diet-related diseases, as current tactics aren't working. She says her organisation often advises patients to steer clear of certain foods.
And yet frequently we see that person in a year's time having the second leg removed because they haven't changed their diet.
Russell Tomata says the Ministry of Health's policy proposal for the NCD hubs will now go to Parliament for approval, though he is confident the project will go ahead regardless. Meanwhile, Phoenix Life Sciences say they are continuing to work with the Vanuatu government to develop a medicinal marijuana industry.
That is Priyanka Srinivasan reporting there. Well, across the Pacific, trade unions are facing a fall in their level of influence. Now, that's largely because of reduced membership and also funding. But in some countries as well, they are facing opposition from the sitting governments. Now, union bosses say that all of that has meant that workers' rights have been overshadowed because unions have less of a say in some of the major decisions affecting them. So in Melanesia, at least, they're keen to turn that around by setting up a new regional body. But, as Evan Wasuka reports, exact model remains a matter of debate.
At the recent Pacific Islands Forum meeting in Tuvalu, the private sector, NGOs and other interest groups all had their day in the sun, meeting with Pacific Island leaders on the sidelines of what is considered the most important meeting in the region. But one group was absent, trade unions.
Something that's lacking in the Pacific Island Forum is the issues on about the trade union movement and how important the trade union movement is.
Daniel Urai is the president of Fiji Trades Union Congress. He believes the declining power of trade unions has left workers without a strong voice.
If any time, this is the most important time, where there's a lot of things happening around the world on climate change and SDGs, and the Pacific is the one that is on the receiving end. And while we have our government in the Pacific who are speaking up, we need to collectively speak together, the government, the trade union movement, the civil society organization. If anything, this is the best time for us.
He's part of a renewed effort to revive the South Pacific Oceanic Council of Trade Unions. An interim meeting will be held in November in Vanuatu to decide the fate of this once active but now defunct council. In the Solomons, Tony Kagovai is the leader of the Solomon Islands Council of Trade Unions. He agrees with the principle of regional solidarity among trade unions and is keen to bring a body together. But he is not convinced by the plans for a wider South Pacific Council of Trade Unions, known as SPOCTU.
In our meeting in PNG, they said to start it off as, I'd call it Pacific Trade Union Congress or Council. But as you know, it has been a dead body since for the last 10 years.
But he does agree on the need for a regional body. His vision, though, is for a smaller, tighter coalition, focusing just on Melanesian countries.
I mean, the Melanesian countries see things in a different way. I mean, our culture are different, our way of looking at things are different from the other Pacific friends. So it will be much easier just in line with the Melanesian spearhead group.
Ephraim Kaltsikau is the Secretary General of Vanuatu's Council of Trade Unions. He's keen for a Melanesian connection too, but one including Australia.
My interest is to hook up with Solomon Islands, Papua New Guinea and New Caledonia and re-establish the kind of unionism that protects the people of the Pacific plus Australia.
So why do unions across the Pacific see a coalition as so important? Mr. Urai says, for example, it could help unions in Fiji deal with a government that's been at loggerheads with trade unions.
Because on our own, no one is coming in to help. SPOCTU has an important role in this, on trying to speak on behalf of Pacific Island workers and see how we can meet governments and formate relationships that are workable.
Whether unions will come together under a wider Pacific body or a sub-regional grouping like a Melanesian bloc is still uncertain. But what can't be denied is the renewed push for unions to have their voices heard beyond their national borders and on broader regional matters.
That is Evan Wasuka reporting there. Well, that is all for Pacific Beat this morning. That's it for me this week. And I would like to say thank you to Richard Hewitt, who's been in the chair this week as I travelled to Fiji. And thanks to the team right across Australia and in the Pacific who've helped put the show together this week. We will be back, of course, same time Monday morning from 6 o'clock in the morning PNG time. Until then, you have a great weekend. I'm Catherine Grau.